Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. The dispute over trade has been intensifying in recent weeks since the U.S. imposed tariffs on aluminum and steel. Speaking in Singapore, President Trump had this to say.
For many years, with China being obviously the most successful at it, but the European Union is second, $151 billion we lost, they were represented at the meeting. And we're being taken advantage of on trade.
After the G7 summit last weekend, President Trump slammed Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, calling him dishonest and weak. The latest tweet storm came after Canada's leader said it will move forward with retaliatory tariffs.
I have made it very clear to the president that it is not something we relish doing, but it is something that we absolutely will do, because Canadians were polite, we're reasonable, but we also will not be pushed around.
Just today, the president announced more tariffs are on the way, this time $50 billion worth on Chinese goods. In this hour, we're talking about trade and the impacts tariffs are having or may have on the Twin Ports, northern Minnesota and Wisconsin. Up first, we hear from Saqib Mahmood. He's an associate professor of sustainable management and economics at UW Superior.
One of the company that would definitely would be affected, I can tell you that Harley Davidson, of course it is in Milwaukee, because the inputs that they use is mainly those steel products, and that will increase the cost of Harley Davidson motorcycles. And why I'm bringing that up, because there are a good number of outlets also here, not only in Duluth, but around this northeast Minnesota, northwest Wisconsin. And if the cost goes up of those motorcycles and those branches cannot make good sales, it might hamper their bottom line. And worst case would be they might have to restructure or maybe thinking about having a certain number of employees working for them. Those kind of decisions they have to make, the restructuring decision. In one or two cases, they might have to close the branch altogether. So definitely there is a why I'm bringing this up. There's also, when this tariff on steels and aluminum was imposed, we also have to think about those U.S. companies which use these two inputs, as their production in their production process. Those impacts should be taken into account. And there are other companies which uses those inputs for semiconductors and other items, and that might be also get affected as well. And regarding the retaliatory tariff, what we see now, not only Canada, but also Mexico, decided to impose tariffs, and Mexico especially targeted the the cheese industry, cheese and the dairy products. Canada is also thinking the same. And we know about the Wisconsin, this area, and, northeast Minnesota, northwest Wisconsin area. There's dairy farmers and the agriculture producers. They will be impacted of those by that retaliatory tariff, And especially for the cheese, I don't know how much the tariff the Mexican government is thinking, but for products made out of pork, they already put 20% tariff on the products, the pork products that's coming from USA to Mexico. And that will definitely impact that industry as a whole. And same thing can be said about the dairy ones. And if they go for the same around 15 to 25% retaliatory tariff, I can imagine at least 20% they might be thinking about retaliatory tariffs on the dairy products and the cheese products. That will definitely hamper our dairy industry and the agriculture industry. Other tariffs, of course, they're talking about some of those specific items. Of course, that may not affect our state, but our area is mainly the dairy products and agriculture products will be the main target.
Well, we also see a lot of traffic related to our Canadian partners here in the Twin Ports. How could this impact what we're seeing as far as cargo and inbound and outbound shipments?
Yeah, that's of course, if we talk about the port, there's two things can happen. If you think about the port of Duluth and Superior in particular, that Twin Ports might experience handling more outbound locally produced cargoes that are shipping iron ores from northeast Minnesota throughout the Great Lakes systems to produce steel. On the other hand, the Twin Ports might face a lack of activities on its handling of inbound cargoes of consumer and industrial products such as cement, salt, wood products, wind turbine components, and other heavy equipment for energy-related projects. So, there's a pluses and minuses, I can say. Pluses with those iron ores, shipping of those iron ores, cargoes from Northeast Minnesota, it will go up. But on the other hand, these inbound cargoes, the consumer industrial products will go down. And the overall impact, of course, depending on which one is hit hardest here, if you think about the retaliatory tariffs. And for the consumers, of course, if our case, if you think about ourselves as the consumers, of course, our income and level and whatever the money we're generating, if it remains same, and if we face higher prices, definitely, it will be affecting the consumer side as well. And I'm not sure about what might be the implications or even the local malls like Miller Hill Mall in Duluth, whether there will be increasing a good number of consumer goods over there, increase of prices I'm talking about. And definitely, it will affect their sales in the end. Maybe not in the short term, but in the long term, it will add up, you know. All these retaliatory tariffs, it will ultimately add up, and we can see the difference in the consumer good prices as well, not only the industrial good prices, but also consumer good prices. And it's just simple, like if my income remains same and I'm facing higher prices, like an inflation kind of thing, definitely I will be worse off here as a consumer. I don't know in the long run whether the consumers as a group would pressure on the local government and the national government to change the policies. But these things I can see in the long run, because due to these retaliatory tariffs, would likely to happen.
So in the long run, what do you think could be happening, I guess, for the agricultural products or those that work with agricultural products and dairy and other businesses here in the area? What do you think that they're going to be looking at?
You know, there's two things can happen. One is people would go for something different where they will not be directly impacted by these tariffs. Other thing that if you're trying to keep the same industry, if you want to maintain the same industrial base or agriculture base type of economy, you have to do something about it. How to make sure the tariff is lowered or the tariff is going back to the original situation, the status quo, like previous status quo, you know. So I can imagine most likely the option two or the second possibility would likely to happen. The dairy farmers, agriculture farmers, most likely when they see that it's hitting their bottom line and they're struggling, they would put pressure on the local legislatures and local government, you know, to come up with some options, you know, for them as well. And, you know, and I can see that it might go all the way up, like, again, to go back to the drawing board. I don't know whether this entire policy, this tariff, actually, we say it's like a tax. In economics, we call it like a tax. Whenever a country imposes a tariff on another country, it's like imposing a tax on the consumers and the industrial producers, you know. So it is not good for anybody. Actually, it hampers the free flow of trade of goods and services. And I don't know, like most likely that second one I am thinking would happen. Yeah, because of this, there will be pressure to change the policy, or a combination of these two could also happen. Is there a possibility like maybe it will help us to come up with some innovative ideas or innovative, but that will take time. And I don't know whether people have that kind of patience, especially these dairy farmers or agriculture or, you know, industries. You know, if you consider even the port authority, when they see that in some areas they're losing business, whether people have the kind of patience to go for a new kind of business venture or new kind of industry if their bottom line is already getting that kind of heat because of these retaliatory tariffs.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me about this, Saqib. Thank you.
No, thank you, Daniel.
Again, you were just listening to Saqib Mahmood. He is an associate professor of sustainable management and economics at UW-Superior. In any given year, about 20 to 30% of the ships moving through the Twin Ports are Canadian-flagged lake vessels. Adele Yardy with the Duluth COA Port Authority says they're watching what the tariffs on aluminum and steel may mean for cargo moving in and out of the port.
When we looked at one particular cargo, one commodity being iron ore, over 35% of the iron ore that moved out of the Twin Ports last year was aboard Canadian Lakers, either for use in steel mills in Canada or for transloading at Canadian ports to larger ocean-going vessels for delivery overseas to places like China and Japan. So we don't know what the effect of the tariff, we haven't heard of any retaliatory tariff being placed on the pellets themselves yet, but there's such an integrated supply chain that's already in place. We're really waiting to see what the long-term effects will be, not just on iron ore, but on other commodities. The agricultural industry, for example, and our port's role in moving a lot of the grain from the Dakotas and northwestern Minnesota across the seaway and over to the EU. So a lot of the long-term impacts of these tariffs, as well as any potential retaliatory tariffs, remain to be seen.
Well, I know that Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau had some strong words over the G7 summit for President Donald Trump. Basically, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said Canada wasn't going to take this lying down. So, you know, if we do see tariffs from Canada as a result of our tariffs, what kind of impact do you think that could have in the short term?
You know, I don't think we'll see short term. I think the effects will be longer term. I'm not an economist by trade. I know that there are level-headed people on both sides of the international boundary between our two nations that are working to try to navigate fair and equitable trade policies. And we certainly understand the motivation at the front end of this in terms of trying to stem the tide of foreign steel dumping by countries like China. That was a necessary fix that had to be made to preserve the integrity of the domestic iron ore production and steelmaking industry. So there was enough in the pipeline already to make that an informed decision. But the problem that a country runs into is what's good for one industry doesn't necessarily translate across the board to all of the other industries that depend on the logistics of real integrated transportation systems like we have here in the Port of Duluth Superior to know what that long-term impact is really going to be.
What other examples have we seen here in the Twin Ports where you know, tariffs like this have been mentioned, or there was the concern of things like this happening?
Being able to level that playing field for domestic producers in the steel industry is one part of the equation. We also have farmers in the heartland of North America who rely on road, rail, and on ships to get their produce to market, whether it goes out through our port on ships or whether it moves by container, which now, having a CN intermodal terminal, our terminal here in Duluth, it equates to having a whole other supply chain interrupted looking at what may move out of West Coast and Gulf ports. So we really are connected here in the Midwest to the rest of the world. And this country's always been a trading and maritime nation and pretty much a world leader in that international trade. So when we look at some of the project cargo that we get in here at our port terminals, things like the wind turbine components, last year in having four different ships come in, they brought components from four different countries around the world. So that has a possibility for tariffs. Now, project cargo is a little different than bulk cargoes because some of those costs you can then anticipate and pass along in terms of final customer costs. But when you start talking about some of those bulk cargoes, it gets a little more questionable how the consumer is going to end up footing a bill and how the actual trade pattern may change. If someone's looking for high-quality wheat and doesn't have to look all the way to North Dakota, but can find something in one of the EU countries, where tariffs are not going to be applied, those are going to have longer-ranging effects.
Well, and are there any other conversations that are taking place at the Port Authority right now with all of the discussion about tariffs?
You know, I think all of the conversations are similar to what's happening across the country. You can see the good in the motivation to really preserve jobs and preserve a strong domestic steel industry. By the same token, I think the same people are having conversations about making sure that we're not too broad stroked in which countries it's applied to and which commodities. And I keep going back to level heads and international commerce and the hope that people on all sides of the coin can come to a better resolution than just making retaliatory decisions and trying to preserve that framework of being a leader in world trade. We really can't go it alone.
So basically, we're just watching and waiting to see how things play out.
You know, from a Port Authority standpoint, from the terminals around the harbor, we can all have our conversations with our elected leaders. We can make our feelings and sentiments known, and we've all done that. But I think that the conversations all have to be had at that higher level. It can't end up being a person's decision or a president's decision. It really needs to be a nation's trade policy that needs to be looked at in terms of sustaining supply chains and our place in that world marketplace. I think anybody who studied the history of the Port of Duluth Superior knows it dates back to the 1870s, and it was grain that started the movement out. And when the St. Lawrence Seaway opened to deep draft navigation in 1959, it opened us up to the whole world. And so to be able to play in that global marketplace, we have to be able to play fairly. And we are really hoping that leaders will keep that common sense approach and move forward with really establishing some longer-term trade policies rather than these one-off kinds of decisions.
So in your perspective, just in watching what's happening, you know, there's been debate over how to describe what's happening right now, if it's a trade spat or a trade war. What do you think?
Well, in my role here, I can't even, those are words that are difficult to quantify. I think there's been a lot of heated discussion, and in some people's words, it's a heated spat. I hate to get to the position where we think that it's an all-out trade war. I just think that there are enough people in all of those G7 countries and in our congressional delegations around this country that can exert some influence and some common sense approach to negotiating trade policy that is of benefit not just to the United States, but to the countries around the world.
Well, is there anything I'm missing that you want to add, Adele?
You know, one little piece of, you know, it's trivia, but it's something to remember that the Port of Duluth Superior sits 2,342 miles from the Atlantic Ocean. That puts us about a two-week travel time from Europe, which has always been where our major trading partners are when it comes to grain and a lot of our project cargoes. And to think that when that saltwater vessel, that salty, comes into the seaway, that it will cross the international border between the U.S. and Canada some 24 to 27 times in navigating this inland waterway. So we are really North American trade partners. When we look at the system and the supply chain, the kinds of products, both raw materials and finished products that move back and forth this international border are really part and parcel of an entire continent. And I think we need to keep that in mind when we start drafting trade policy.
What is that saying? I can't think of it right now. Cut off your nose to spite your
face.
Face, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of those. What's good for the goose isn't always good for the gander, you know. Really, it's the unintended consequences of tariffs and short-term reactive trade policies that can have really long-term effects. When you look at logistics people who who are trying to move product around the world, if they have to change a supply chain and they have to move, find a new source for a particular commodity, and then figure out the way to move it by ship, by rail, and by truck to its final destination. When that freight forwarder does all of that and makes the change in that supply chain, they may not be inclined to change it back if the customer and everybody else is then satisfied with the quality of the product and the delivery stream. So we may talk about, well, this will have a short-term impact, but if we can't reconfigure policy to earn the trust back as being a reliable supplier for a lot of these commodities, there are customers and countries that may find those products sourced elsewhere. And we may be end up losing in the long run on some of those other deliveries. So I'm really hoping that there's a good deal of study and some compromise going into these, because we need to be mindful that protecting one of us may very well put others at risk.
Again, that was Adele Yorty with the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll hear from Kelsey Johnson with the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota and Nick George with the Midwest Food Products Association. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're talking about trade and the impacts tariffs are having or may have on the Twin Ports, northern Minnesota, and Wisconsin. Up next, we hear from Kelsey Johnson. She's the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota.
In 2015 and in 2016, we saw a significant downturn in the regional economy in northeastern Minnesota, while the rest of the economy of the nation was thriving. And business was booming and infrastructure was growing across the nation, the iron mines of northern Minnesota sat idled. And that was because, in large part, it was due to illegal steel imports and steel being dumped on our shores because the International Trade Commission hadn't fully put into effect any anti-dumping or countervailing duties. What we saw from that was that President Obama came forward with a number of anti-dumping and countervailing duties, about 170 of them, and he imposed them on all sorts of different countries, because what we were seeing is that the Chinese, in their infinite wisdom, were going out of their way to start the steelmaking process in their country and then shipping it to another country to ship it illegally into our country under another country's flag. So we put in 170 anti-dumping, countervailing duties, and unfortunately, it still didn't help the economy of northeastern Minnesota or any of the steelmaking facilities that we have across the nation. So what's really important about this and why it's so important about northern Minnesota and our regional economy in northeastern Minnesota and northwestern Wisconsin is that that is the largest producer of domestic iron. We produce about 85% of the iron that makes the steel, that makes the things that Americans use every day, whether it's cars and trucks or the infrastructure that they use to build the buildings, the bridges, the roads, and many of the trains and anything else that you can think of that's made of steel. That all comes from the raw product that comes from northeastern Minnesota. It's not all from northeastern Minnesota, but the vast majority of the domestic production comes from northeastern Minnesota and actually northern Michigan as well. So we have kind of that whole area is rich with iron, and that's part of the reason why this was a big step. So it started with the Obama administration, and then President Trump came in, and we've put significant pressure on both President Obama and President Trump to do something about this illegal steel dumping in some way, shape, or form. And the Section 232 was really what we've been asking for a very long time. And those steel tariffs and those negotiations kind of came to a head in late March. And President Trump announced that he was going to impose a 25% steel tariff and then a 10% aluminum tariff. And he started off with some of the typical cheater nations, and he's been using that since then as a negotiation tool. And it is of my belief that we have a very strong partnership with Canada, and I think that we also trade with them quite a bit, and that the trade agreements with NAFTA need to be updated and upgraded. But I know that this 25% tariff on steel is part of that negotiation. I know that the Trump administration, from what I understand as well, went to a lot of the allied nations and said, look, this is what we're looking to do. We're trying very hard to drop the quota and the amount of steel that you're shipping into our country down so that our domestic steelmaking production will come up. And we've already seen some of the steelmaking facilities that have been idled for a very long time coming back online. And the demand for our iron in northeastern Minnesota and northern Michigan has increased since then. And so it affects every facet of business across the area. And we do have some very good partners, both in Superior, Wisconsin, and northwestern Wisconsin. And that's really affected their ability to do their business as well.
So you're already seeing hiring as a result of these tariffs on the range.
Yeah, we're seeing an increase in demand. And so because of that increase in demand, we're finally getting an increase in our cost and in our price for our products. So we're able to then increase the amount of employees we have, and it will continue hopefully into the foreseeable future. But that really comes down to the negotiations that we have long term.
You know, there's a lot of dispute over whether or not tariffs are a good thing. I mean, some are saying that it's hampering free trade and that it's not good for anyone. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I understand that there are differing views on this, but really at this point in time, we've been asking for this for 30 or more years. We've been asking for a level playing field when it comes to our costs and our cost to produce, and we haven't seen that. And this is the first effort that has been very strong in a very, very long time that has really helped and has been a complete response to our request. And it's something that's really changed the dynamic of the way that we're doing our business, and hopefully will continue into the long-term future. So we are supportive of the tariffs at this point in time, and we'll continue to be as long as we possibly can be. And we're very happy to be a part of the conversation because it is truly a national defense and a national security need to solidify and secure our steel and iron making capabilities.
Well, and I think a lot of people support jobs for the region. I think the question becomes, you know, at what cost? Some are saying that, you know, we might be seeing more hiring from this, but consumers are going to be paying more for it down the line locally as
sure.
Well. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think Secretary Ross did a really nice job of kind of laying out what those costs might look like. It's about less than a penny per can of Coke or per six-pack of beer. So I think that that's a pretty good analogy. I think that also when you look at buying a new car, what does the steel tariff mean? I mean, 25% seems like a very high number. But as far as buying a brand new car, according to Secretary Ross, it's about a $150 increase for a $35,000 car. So when you're looking at buying a new car, I think that as an American, I would rather see those jobs go to my friends and my neighbors and my community members than go to some place that I don't necessarily believe in many of the beliefs that they hold. And so I would rather see those jobs go to my friends and neighbors and pay that extra $150. And I understand for some that's a lot of money, but when you're looking at buying a brand new car, I think that that's a small price to pay to solidify and secure our national defense, our iron and steel making capabilities in the United States.
Well, what about talks of retaliatory tariffs? I mean, how could that impact things?
Well, that's a great question. At this point in time, I'm not entirely sure what that may mean. As you've seen, Canada has announced that they will be putting together some tariffs and they'll be implemented July 1st. And we're not entirely sure what exactly that will look like. But as I said before, we're very hopeful that the negotiations with our friends and neighbors to the north and to the south will go well and that we'll find a good solution to this, but also something that will benefit not just iron mining and steel making, but something that will benefit the entire economy of the United States and all of the other major players as well.
Well, and this comes just ahead of President Donald Trump visiting the Duluth area next week. Is there anything that you want to hear from him on the trade issue?
Yeah, I'm really excited about having the conversation with him and thanking him for putting together this meaningful package and really creating a different dynamic within our own regional economy. I've seen and talked to many of the local folks. We've gone from kind of feeling downtrodden after the 2015 and 2016 downturn to really feeling very hopeful and optimistic about our overall region economy, and I hope that will continue into the future.
Again, you were just listening to Kelsey Johnson, president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. While U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has defended steel and aluminum tariffs, saying price increases would be negligible, the Midwest Food Products Association doesn't see it that way. Nick George is the executive director of the Trade Association, which represents food processors in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois.
Our perspective has to do with cans, okay? The tariff would have an impact on tin plate, and tin plate is the type of metal that's used to make cans for not only the food processing industry, but other industries such as the auto industry for things like oil filters and air filters and that sort of thing. So it's a unique type of metal, of which the U.S. only produces about 52%. And so so our members and our can manufacturers need to reach out or need to buy from foreign suppliers about 48% of their product. The tariff, as it currently stands, would impose extra cost on that foreign material. And we estimate that extra cost is about 2 cents a can, okay, which doesn't sound like a lot, but one of my companies said that 2 cents a can means an additional $25 million for them. And the food industry is a very competitive industry, and the profit margins are very thin. And so $25 million is something that they look at very hard. Now, some people ask, obviously you can just, pass that on. 2 cents is not that big of a deal. Well, it's a competitive market, and it's not easy to pass that on. So that's our concern. Our concern is that it's going to limit our supply of material to make cans and to use cans, and it's going to add to the cost of our product.
Yeah, and when this first was proposed earlier this year that this might happen, I know that a number of companies, including PepsiCo, Dr. Pepper, Coca-Cola, they all wrote to the president saying what kind of impacts this might have. And I think they estimated that if there was a 20% tariff at that time, that it would cost more than $500 million for them as far as manufacturing costs
right.
would go.
And and their primary concern was aluminum for soda and beer cans and that kind of thing. And my guys mostly deal with the other type of metal, the tin plate. But it's significant. One company, it's $25 million. Well, that's only one company. Think of some of the size of some of these companies and all the product that goes into these cans, and it adds up. It adds up quite a bit.
Well, and that's not like the only issue that's facing some of your members, too, right now. I mean, also, we're seeing costs rising at this point in time, right? There's inflation in the market right now.
Right now in the market, yes, there is. And but it depends on what product you're making. Are you making a beef product, pork product, vegetable product, et cetera? But, yeah, right now the food market is a very tight market, and it has to do with a lot of different things. But one thing which doesn't concern us on this issue is consumer desires. What is the consumer looking for? That's always the unknown cost.
And so I guess, as we're watching things roll out, there's some discussion. I mean, the EU, Canada, and Mexico have all said that they would impose retaliatory tariffs, but we haven't seen those yet. I mean, what kind of impact could that have?
Well, that could be harmful to the extent that we order product from overseas, and which we do. We have the food industry is very dynamic, and we export a lot of food here in the state of Wisconsin and, of course, from the Midwest, but we also import quite a bit of raw product, and that could have a very detrimental effect. We hope that there's a grand plan somewhere that during the negotiations they somehow can reach a compromise But for example, in the area of the NAFTA discussions, the treaty discussions, you know, there's no doubt that things need to be tweaked with NAFTA. But generally speaking, that's been a good treaty. We don't want to see that treaty come apart.
Are there things that you would like to see tweaked, though, or your members would like to see?
You know, Danielle, I don't have any real specifics on that, to be honest with you. But I'm sure there's some industries that would like to see some things. But generally speaking, any position we've taken on that has been towards the broader parameters, that it has by and large been a good treaty. And if there are places that need to be fixed, then we should fix them.
So what does all this uncertainty in the meantime do, or how does that affect your members?
With all these discussions, well,
yeah,
it's having an immediate impact right now. They're all seeing prices go up, and you know they're scrambling to lock in some prices and lock in supplies, and which means you know it's the classic case of you know a supply and demand, and so prices are going up now. And one company I've talked to said they've had to readjust their budget for 2019, and everything's gone up. So uncertainty is never good in the business world. The business world loves certainty, and this has brought a great deal of uncertainty.
Well, is there anything that I'm missing that you would like to add or anything that you're keeping an eye on as discussions move forward surrounding this?
The one area that we've sort of, you know, rested our case on here is that these tariffs were put under what they call Section 232, which has to do with national security. And so the premise is that we need to impose these tariffs for national security reasons. Well, we disagree. Tin plate for food is not a national security risk by any means, and we hope that somewhere in these negotiations, tin plate and aluminum will be taken out of this equation. Meanwhile, there's a number of other packaging companies that are seeing this as a great opportunity. And so, and I have been contacted by other companies saying that, you know, now that prices are going up on tin plate, perhaps there's opportunity for different type of packaging. And so we might see different packages now on the shelves in the next 6 months or so, or probably longer than that. It takes a while to ramp this up. But this might pose an opportunity for other packaging companies.
Are there any suggestions out there right now? You know, if we're not going to use tin plate, what would we use?
Well, there are other means such as pouches. Plastic pouches are popular, but there are some problems with that. But I think they're overcoming some of those problems. So people are looking at different types of packaging. The packaging world is a very dynamic world. And again, it's it comes down to price and consumer desire.
And it's going to definitely hit consumers in the pocketbook in the meantime?
Right. You know, we in America, we have a very good food supply. It's a very safe food supply. It's very diverse, and it's very affordable. And we take that for granted. You know, we hope that that these tariff discussions are resolved, and that we can get back to providing good, safe, affordable food for the U.S. and for the world.
Again, you've been listening to Nick George with the Midwest Food Products Association. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, but when we come back, we'll talk with Kim Young of the Superior African Heritage Community about what's on tap for this weekend's Juneteenth celebration in Superior and review news of the week. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. This weekend, two celebrations will be held in Duluth and Superior to recognize Juneteenth. Kim Young is the coordinator of the Superior African Heritage Community, and she spoke with me by phone this week about what they're planning for Superior.
Well, like every year, we have music. We're having some spoken word performances. The major attraction dancers are coming out, and this year we're hoping to have an obstacle course race between the 148th Fighter Wing and the police, the Superior Police Department Special Task Force robots. The Duluth event is Saturday from 12 to 6 over at the Central Hillside Park. Okay. Ours is Sunday from 2 to 7 at Kelly Park in Superior.
So Juneteenth is also known as Freedom Day, predominantly an African-American holiday that commemorates June 19th, 1865, the announcement of the abolition of slavery. Do you feel like people know that? Do you feel like that's common knowledge?
Among the African Heritage community, it is, and we're seeing an addition each year of Juneteenth events in American cities, and it's been growing since the 1980s when we really started to celebrate it. Before then, most people didn't realize that even though the abolition of slavery came about in 1863, it was not until June 19th in 1865 when the last stronghold of slavery was basically declared free because of the cotton crop and to give many plantation owners an extra year of harvest. They weren't told in Texas that slavery had been abolished. We, through our events, are trying to raise awareness in our communities and also raise cultural awareness about not just our history from slavery, but our history before being brought into America and things that we have done since then. We draw attention to our excellence. We draw attention to our academic and social achievements.
And do you feel like that is something that is recognized, you know, outside of recognized holidays like this?
In many communities, it is, including ours, and in quite a few others, it's not a recognized holiday. We are looking in Superior, I know, to have that declared, you know, right along with Martin Luther King Day events and Remembrance Day events for the Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial, because it is important to building a core for the African heritage communities in our area. So,
how has that been for the African heritage community here in Superior? What are you seeing as, you know, some of the successes and challenges that you've had with that?
Well, we've grown in recognition with the community for our works and our deeds, and we've gotten a huge, wonderful response in sponsorships, partnerships, donations. Our attendance each year has been growing. This year, we estimate we'll probably see between 300 and 450 people attending, which is up from last year. The first 2 years, we had about 300 people every year. And with the recognition we've gotten last year and this year, we expect those numbers to increase. It's good for empowering the African heritage community here because traditionally the church has been the core of the African heritage community. It was our community center. It was our faith center. It was where we basically did everything. Our whole community revolved, but that was where we had our core at. For communities like Duluth and Superior, where the African church is not the core of our communities, we're building those cores here. And so having events like this help to establish those roots for families to come and see that there are events going on that represent their culture, their background, their experiences, and also give them a reason to stay. When you see that events like that are happening, it's not only good for the community that's there, it brings in tourism. It brings in people from the Twin Cities and from Milwaukee. I just had a call from a woman who's coming from Washburn County who wants to come up and is looking for, you know, people to help with rides and things like that. So it helps with the tourism industry. It helps with people coming up to spend money in our local economy. So opportunities like this are something that should not be passed up by our city when it comes to increasing diversity and increasing, you know, our tourism and local economy.
Again, you were just listening to Kim Young with the Superior African Heritage Community, and the Juneteenth celebration in Superior again will be held on Sunday from 2 to 7 at Kelly Park. And now here's a look back on News of the Week. A coalition of more than 130 U.S. and Canadian cities is speaking out against the trade dispute between the two nations. Local leaders want to work together on issues affecting both countries as tensions mount over U.S.-imposed tariffs on aluminum and steel. The trade spat has intensified since remarks by U.S. President Donald Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau after last weekend's G7 summit. John Dickert says a war of words between top officials threatens relations between U.S. and Canadian cities. Dickert is president and chief executive officer of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence Cities Initiative.
When you look at the fact that our people and our products are constantly crossing this soft border, we don't find it being helpful to create conflict and division with our partners here in Canada.
Superior Mayor Jim Payne says relations with Canada are vital for protecting the Great Lakes and the city's economy.
We rely on international shipping traffic, international trucking traffic, rail traffic, and a pipeline that is international. So we move a lot of goods and products, especially commodities, over our international border, and a lot of that affects Superior's economy.
U.S. and Canadian mayors have pledged to continue work on issues like phosphorus runoff, invasive species, and potential water diversions from the Great Lakes Basin. The Wisconsin Department of Justice announced earlier this week that 20 schools received more than $1 million in grants to improve safety. As Olivia Shalaby reports, the Lux School District was awarded around $39,000 for security improvements.
The grants will fund three major security improvements at the district. Lux School District Superintendent Corey Hinkle says they'll be able to nearly double the district's security cameras by high-frequency walkie-talkies and install a raptor management system to conduct visitor background checks.
The management system will help us better monitor who's coming and going into our school on a daily basis. It'll keep records for us, electronically records, that we can look back and see who's coming in. And it also let us flag different people if there's been issues in the past so we can better monitor them when they're coming in as well.
Hinkle says they will also train staff about mental health issues and how to see warning signs. He says there is always room to improve security.
Keeping our staff up to date with current trends in education and in safety and making sure everybody's educated to best react if a dangerous situation would occur.
Hinkle says they are going to start working on security improvements right away, and the updates to the security system should be in place by September 1st. The district serves around 460 students. Olivia Shalaby, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin's 11 tribes and the State Department of Public Instruction have been working on agreements to improve communication and educational outcomes for tribal youth. The Lac-du-Flambeau Band of Lake Superior Chippewa is the first tribe to reach an agreement with the state. Lac-du-Flambeau Tribal Education Department Director Ashley Mackey says the goal is to improve communication and coordination of programs for tribal kids.
The Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction commits to providing ongoing cultural responsiveness training to all of its staff to ensure improved communication, service, and understanding, and working with the Lac-du-Flambeau tribe in serving our students.
State Schools Superintendent Tony Evers says the agreement furthers their commitment to educate kids about the state's tribal nations under Wisconsin law.
It's more about recognition of the sovereignty, individual sovereignty of each nation. And not only recognizing that, but identifying ways that we can help American Indian kids achieve at higher levels.
The tribe and DPI signed the agreement in May. Northern Wisconsin residents joined citizens around the nation in Washington, D.C. this week to support incentives for climate change solutions. As Olivia Shalaby reports, advocates for Northern Wisconsin's winter tourism industry say action is needed to ensure their livelihood and a thriving economy.
Ben Pop was among a group of seven who lobbied lawmakers in the nation's capital this week. Pop is the executive director of the American Breckebinerski Foundation. He was part of a panel discussion about the impacts of warming temperatures and climate change on winter sports. Pop says they also spoke with Republican Congressman Sean Duffy about joining the Climate Solutions Caucus.
Being from here in Hayward, knows a fair amount what the Berkey's about and the economic impact it has, well over $20 million a year in the area. So we need to make sure that the event happens, and you probably do know in 2017 it was canceled. We had a lot of rain and no snow.
Pop says it's also important to identify solutions to climate change to promote sustainability so that future generations can enjoy what Wisconsin winters have to offer. Pop says market-based climate solutions could be the first step towards solving the problem.
that letting the market help drive that change, so you're incentivizing people to look at cleaner alternatives, things like solar and geothermal and wind, and essentially making things like fossil fuels that we know cause a lot of emissions, gasoline, et cetera, higher in cost, and thus incentivizing us to go in that direction.
Pop says climate change is a bipartisan problem. He hopes lawmakers continue conversations to improve the health of the environment and the economy. Olivia Shalaby, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The State Department of Natural Resources has picked four people to participate in Wisconsin's first managed elk hunt. Agency officials announced Wednesday that they chose the hunters through a random drawing Monday. More than 38,000 people entered. The hunt will be limited to the Clam Lake herd in Sawyer, Bayfield, Ashland, and Price counties. It will run from October 13th through November 11th and from December 13th through the 21st. An additional license will be awarded through a raffle conducted by the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Tickets are $10 each and can be purchased through the foundation's website. The winner will be drawn on August 11th. In Duluth, the Duluth School District will work this summer to get rid of rats that have infested an elementary school. Facilities manager Dave Spooner estimates there are 100 to 200 rats at Congdon Elementary School. A local pest control firm will clear the footing and foundation drainage system underneath a gym addition where many of the rats have congregated. KBJR-TV says pest control workers are currently trapping about 5 rats a day. Spooner says the eradication is compliant with Minnesota Department of Health and Environmental Protection Agency guidelines. The school is closed to the public for now. And that's been a look back on some of the news of the week. I'm Danielle Kading, and that's it for our program. You can hear it again online on our website at wpr.org/superior. You can also find us on iTunes under Hear Me Out. You've been listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. We hope to have you back with us again next week. Until then, have a great weekend. Thank you.